Hello everyone, this is the Desi Condition. I'm Tanushree, and today we're going to continue the discussion from last week with Nita. And if you haven't listened to it, now is the time, baby. Anyways, I'll summarize real quick. We talked about how her turning to alcohol was a type of medicine that she used to deal with certain emotions and certain crises that she was not at the time equipped to deal with. And in this episode, we'll talk more about the flip side of that. We'll talk about her recovery process and finding the tools to understanding her condition and learning to resolve those underlying issues.
I'm a big believer in 12-step programs, but like for me, like it was activity. It was running, it was hiking, it was throwing myself into these like physical pursuits, because I found that for me, and especially like, and I don't know if you found this, being Indian, there is this sort of negative attitude, the way I grew up and in my community with all the other kids I grew up with, there was a very negative attitude towards anything physical, like sports and anything like that. Like there was not, like nobody really cared. Like gym class wasn't important, which like it wasn't, it was stupid, but like, you know, sports and like being sporty.
Oh, I was on my period for like all of seventh grade.
Right, like the way that we were brought up, like the way the whole Desi like culture is, there's such a focus on academic only. Academic and then get married. It was all about like the work. Like, what are you doing for your job? What are you doing for your job? Like, we don't care about the waitressing thing. We care about like your publishing job. How is that going? And like, I'm still in that industry. I'm doing very well. I've moved up fairly quickly. Like, but I was definitely stagnant in my career for a while too, because like I as a person was very stagnant as well. You know, and like my running, like I was going to meetings, I was doing all this stuff. I was in this job in publishing for a long time that I hated. I was not moving up, I was stagnant, but I wanted that longevity there. And we're also raised to feel like time is success, right? Like time in relationships or time in job, you know, like I've been working here for 10 years, I've been in this relationship for 15 years, and therefore it's successful. Not counting that I'm unhappy in every single one of those years. And my parents were like encouraging of that, and I remember at one point I was like, I like can't do this anymore, and it's still, things didn't make sense to me. And then I had started running, and it like was a pathetic attempt, sometimes still is, like, you know. And it was like I went to the end of the block, and I was like, this is the furthest I've ever run in my life.
No, aren't you doing like marathons now?
Yes I am.
That's awesome.
And so, but like that was how it started. And what had happened with physical activity, hiking as well, because I came back from doing Kilimanjaro earlier this year, having
awesome.
Never hiked before, and that's a little, I mean, it was hard. I don't suggest that people do it that way, by the way. I don't endorse that method. But what I had found that I also think that's part of my obsessive mentality, but it's like understanding that limit. Like, okay, I need to institute these rules and this structure, because otherwise I'm just going to go in 110% and burn myself out. Like, this is just that whatever switch exists in people's minds that are not addicts that tell you, you know what, this is a little much. I have not known myself to have that switch, nor have I known any addicts that I know to have that moment of like, I think this is too much. I just don't feel that ever.
Yeah, do you think you have that issue not just with alcohol, but like with anything else in
your
life?
Yeah, 100%.
Like, would you say like you have just kind of an addictive personality?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. Like, okay. I think that's where the misconception lies between like, oh, alcohol being evil, and like, you know, all of these like degenerates going around and doing drugs. And like, of course, a lot of drugs are debilitating. I have a fairly like, and there are some people who are sober, they become crusaders for a sober lifestyle. I'm not necessarily one of those people. The people that I'm close to are not those kind of people either. I think heroin's not cool. I think if you drink and do coke and you're fine, and you're genuinely fine, and you're not fucking up your entire, your relationships, your job, your everything, and you're totally, like, not just functional, genuinely okay, great, that's awesome. And I do actually know some people who can do that, and power to them. And more importantly, they can also not do it. Right? Like, if they don't have any in their apartment, they're like, whatever. Like
they have
fine.
The facilities within themselves
to be
control
like,
themselves.
Right, to be right. like, okay. Like, I have friends who, like, are recreational drug users, and if there's no drugs in their apartment that night, they're like, oh, well. It's like, I don't have pizza in my apartment. That sucks. But, like, you know, I'm not going to lose.
That does suck.
Right? But I'm not going to lose my mind over it,
you know,
or be like, oh, okay, I have all these other groceries, but let me go buy the pizza. Like, you know, like, you just make two, and you find something else. And I think if you can drink and you can do all of that and not do it to excess, that's great. I'm not one of these people that have that switch. Mm-hmm. So for me, like, I definitely overdid it with running. I, like, frequently injure myself a lot. And they're all overuse injuries. But what had happened was it was the complete opposite. My parents are, I think it's fair to say, unhappy with this. Mm-hmm. But weirdly also proud. I don't know. It's like a contradiction always. But, like, it just became a physical way to measure how I was doing mentally. Because I couldn't, like, to some extent, you are quantifying your recovery because it's so important in that early
But the running was a way for you to quantify
Yeah, like, it. I mean, you're quantifying it anyway because you're counting with day one, day two. Right, everybody's doing that here. What's your day count, whatever. But at a certain point, like, they call it counting days. At a certain point, you stop counting days and you start counting months. And then you stop. I don't know how many months I have, but I know I have 3.5 years. You know, like, I now I'm counting years and hopefully we'll continue to do that. And most people get to that point. I know some people who never forget how many years sober they are. And I also know some people who are like, I'm 15 years sober. Yeah. Like, I don't know. But they're doing the work behind it. So, like, the quantifying becomes less and less important. But in the beginning, you're trying to get whatever scraps you
can.
That's
a very good point.
You know, because you are. When you first start anything.
And so that's why you mark your successes in this quantifiable way.
Yeah, okay, because you can see it. You can, like, do that tally mark, you know, and you can be like, all right, another check. Because it also makes it easier. Like, now, if I go through a tough time, and they happen, everyone has them. If I go through a tough time, if there's a lot of, my job has weird seasons of, like, there are lots of parties for a few weeks, and those are a little difficult to deal with back to back to back to back. And when that happens, I'm just like, it's fine. Like, this sucks. It's going to be fine in a few weeks. I know that now. In the way that you know things, you know that if you, like, fall, trip in your kitchen and scrape your knee, you're going to be fine. But when you're a child doing it for the first time, you're like, the world is over.
Yeah.
You know, and the quantifying it in the beginning makes it easier, and the whole day at a time thing, that's, like, our big thing, right?
Yeah.
And our big, like, buzz phrase, where it's like, don't even worry about being sober tomorrow, just focus on today. And then tomorrow morning, that will be tomorrow Nita's problem, you know? Yeah. So then I'm only worrying about, like, okay, midnight I go to bed, so I only have to worry about, like, 6 hours. I can do 6 hours, right? Yeah. Like, and I remember when 6 hours was too much, someone was like, just do 10 minutes. You're good for 10 minutes, do it for another 10 minutes. Like, and just do that until you are too tired of counting minutes, you have to go to sleep.
Yeah. Do you watch that show, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt?
No, but everyone keeps telling me to.
I only watched one season of it. I remember in season one, she was saying, so I think somebody was asking her, like, how are you always so okay? The story is that, like, she was in a bunker for, like, 15 years. Somebody kidnapped her when she was a kid. She finally gets out and is, like, trying to live like a human. She also has a mentality of, like, a 12-year-old, which is when she got kidnapped.
Oh, okay.
So people are like, how are you, like, so, like, chipper all the time? And she's like, you know, when I was in the bunker, I always told myself, if I can count to 10, I'm okay.
Yeah.
And I, like, that part stuck with me from, like, this random comedy show.
Yeah. No, it's weird. It's true. The things that stick with you.
Yeah.
And that's so true. I've never heard that. I've heard many reasons I should watch that show. I've not heard that. But that's so true. Like, whatever metric works, right? Yeah. But after a while, like, whenever you start anything new, like, the curve, like, the exponential increase, like, when you go from not knowing anything to learning it, like, you immediately become... Like, the return is a lot greater in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm saying it in a really weird way because I don't know how to find the words. But, like, and then at a certain point, like, that curve becomes more and more gradual. Because when you don't know anything, like, you instantly start seeing more return in the beginning. Because, like, suddenly I go from not running to now being able to run a mile. That's amazing.
Yeah, you know, that is amazing.
Right, but, like, but after a while, that tapers, right?
Yeah.
Because that distance between now I'm running 2 miles to 3 miles, like, that's a lot smaller than sitting from my couch and going to a mile, you know?
Yeah.
And the same thing with sobriety, same thing with anything really difficult, I think. And so what ended up happening was, like, for me, through physical activity, I would say my thing was running, but I would say any kind of, like, the hiking, I found it the same way, it was a weird way for me to, I was also in a lot of pain, and I think some of it was accident related. I think a lot of it was, like, just psychosomatic too. Mm-hmm. I think I just, like, I would, like, stop eating. I, like, remember I didn't drink water for 2 days because
knew
I quit drinking and I had forgotten that I could drink water.
Wow.
And I remember my friend who was sober, his wife came over who drank. She was my drinking buddy. Mm-hmm. It's hilarious that we're friends. But she, like, came over and she was like, are you drinking water? And I was like, no, I quit drinking. She was like, water.
Just quit drinking, period.
Period, forever. it just never occurred to me. My life was over. And so,
interesting.
And I lost like 35 pounds like overnight. It was insane.
Wow.
But I wasn't eating. I wasn't like, I couldn't figure out how to do anything. I was like constantly in pain. And like, this was like a really weird way for me. Cause you can talk about reshaping your brain, right? And it doesn't make any sense in that moment. And also like, I was never brought up to talk about mental health. Like, yeah. My family didn't talk about therapy and like depression or anything like that, you know? So like, none of that made sense to me, but I understood the cursory, like being in shape, like, you know, like we don't put any value into physical labor, but we put value into like, you can't be fat, you know, but you also can't be too skinny, and you also can't be like too whatever, you know? And I felt like I can slowly start to shape the way that I'm not looking, but like I could shape my body. Like, I could alter what my body could do. Like, my body was able to walk a little bit, but now I can, like, run a little bit. Now I can run a little bit longer. Now I can walk longer. I had never been in the woods before. Now I've been in the woods for 10 days. Like, you know, like, there were these small things that I was doing, and I was slowly shaping my own body and self into something that was unrecognizable before through just sheer effort of, like, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to put in the work. Because, like, you can't just go from, like, going from my couch to doing a marathon. Like, I had to put in that work every day, and I had to deal with the, I don't feel like running today, you know, and do that. And it suddenly made everything else fall into line. I just did that with everything else.
So I know you said that you feel like it's easier in the beginning to measure your successes, like with actual numbers. Now that you're like 3.5 years down the line, right. Like, what do successes look like? And what does that mean to you?
I think there's also a point in all things too, where you kind of, like, it's that weird ennui of, like, nothing is happening. Like, the first year was really, really hard. And even though it was really, really hard, especially those first few months, that it being really hard, it was like an up and down. And it was a conflict, so it kept me engaged. Even though everything felt terrible at first, it was still engaging. And then for me, I think if it hit around the 2-year mark, I, like, got incredibly depressed. I remember I was having a hard time leaving my apartment. It was like really bad for a little bit. And like I'd stopped going to meetings. I'd stopped calling people, like stopped running, but not even just running. Like I go through periods of that too, but like, you know, just stopped doing anything.
What was going on? Was it like?
It was just the boredom of like things weren't hard anymore. So it wasn't challenging. It wasn't.
Oh my God. That's such a good point.
You know what I mean? Cause when things are challenging and hard, like that's an addiction too. It's all addiction. It's all addiction in the end. And there's an addiction to conflict.
I mean, people who have been through trauma tend to seek more.
Right. Like, you seek more conflict.
Tumultuous relationships.
And exactly. 100%. And I was the same way. I had like oh my God, like an absurd relationship history, which also my parents were not thrilled about. But you know, like stuff like that where I was like, and then there's the whole like, there, it's not a rule because there's no rules in sobriety except don't drink. Like whatever gets you to not drinking is a rule, but there are suggestions. And one of the suggestions is don't date your first year, which is a really good rule that everyone should follow. Everyone breaks it. And then everyone breaks it going, I should have followed that rule.
Really? Okay, talk more about that. It's really interesting.
It's, well, because you initially think, like, I'm good, I'm great, you're on this weird high, right? Because you're on that roller coaster. Things are, like, so crappy, and then they start to come up, and you feel great, and you're like, this is the point. I'm sober, I'm doing all this stuff, I'm 3 months sober, like, I'm doing great, and I'm ready to meet somebody. And the thing is, like, you do not have any idea. Like, you're an infant. Like, you have only just started to learn how to live with your own brain without the assistance of a substance, you know? And it's like, and without your medicine. You're basically with an illness without your medicine, looking now for another treatment. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not the time to jump into something new. And a lot of times what happens is, like, there's this kind of, like, and I don't know if anyone, I know people in recovery feel this way, but you know, there is this kind of addictive quality to new relationships, that kind of like heady feeling, you know, where you like get into them and that person like really wants you and that feels like gratifying and it lifts you up and it's external. It's more external.
Yeah, I think
stuff.
In general, people tend to turn to like romantic relationships for that kind of comfort.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like, and it gives you that external validation that then absolves you of needing to find your own internal validation.
Okay.
So that's the first problem. The second problem, and I want to caveat that by saying some people it's fine, but most of the time I've not seen it work.
Okay.
Most of the time I've seen it crash and burn. And because the first, you have no internal validation, you're super insecure. You're also throwing all your time into this new relationship instead of like doing stuff you need to do.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you want to, like, stick back to, like, if you have, like, a kidney problem, you have to get on dialysis, right? Like, now imagine you stop going to dialysis because you, like, found someone cute that you want to hang out with. Like, you're eventually going to get worse.
Yeah.
You know? And it's not that person's fault, but this is just not the time for you to do that. And so it's the same sort of thing where it's, like, you need to start, like, there's, now you're not sitting there going, let me look internally, let me do an inventory of myself, let me look at where my resentments are, who am I resentful against? You know, resentments are a big part of recovery. And, like, and doing your resentments. And whenever I have struggled, I have found that I haven't done my resentments in a while. And some people that I know, and I don't know how they're able to do this, some people do them every day. And they just do, like, a spot check. Like, all right, was I resentful today? Against whom? Okay, let me just resolve that within myself and go ahead.
Is that part of, like, the staying sober process recommended?
Yeah, and I would just say it's something that I have seen benefit people even who weren't in recovery. I think we are all full of resentment.
Yeah, I was going to say that. It doesn't sound like it needs to be exclusive to alcoholism.
And I think a lot of people in our culture, too. Like, sometimes when I think of, like, the way that I was brought up, too, or, like, talking to friends of mine within the Indian community who are having issues with their parents being accepting of their lifestyles or whatever it is, you know, there's, like, this anger there that, like, I know I kind of look at, and this isn't me being holier than thou, but it's funny because we'll talk about it, and they'll be like, well, you have a good relationship with your parents, and they're accepting of you, and I was like, I'm a drug addict. Like, I'm a drug addict that is not a lawyer, engineer, or doctor. Like, they don't approve of my lifestyle. It just has stopped bothering me.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, like, that carries. It's like when you meet someone who is confident. I wouldn't say that I'm super confident, but I would say that, like, when you meet someone who is very confident, that sort of spills off a little bit, right? They seem very assured. Like, if there's a freaky situation happening, but someone is very calm, they're like, okay, stuff is okay because this person is calm.
Yep.
People will pick up on that, you know? And so, but the thing was, like, I had to remove my resentment against my family. It's a very hard thing, and it sometimes crops up again. But it was, like, a really deep-seated thing to sit there and be really angry and be like, I'm angry at my family. I'm angry at my family for somehow giving me this disease, for never teaching me how to deal with the world, so that I had to find my own way to deal with it, and I found the wrong way.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, just resentful about thing after thing after thing, like, feeling like I got all of my physical insecurities from them, my insecurities about not being as smart as everyone else from them, like, all of these things that, like, if I really wanted to, I could, like, just draw that line to my family and draw that line to my culture and be like, you know, we're Indian and this is so deep-seated, and it wouldn't be wrong, but, like, I can't carry that anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't carry this, like, sweeping this under the rug. We went to an Indian party and someone had said, like, hey, what have you been up to lately? And I remember, like, on the tip of my tongue about to be like, oh, nothing, I'm fine, work is fine. And I literally just, like, spur of the moment, my sister was sitting next to me, and I think she did not know I was going to say that, but I was like, oh, I was in a really bad car accident, and, you know, and all of this stuff happened, and I quit drinking, and I had to go into a program for addiction recovery, and it's been a struggle, you know? And
so you were saying this at, like, a family, like, oh, wow.
I don't think anyone is happy.
Was this, like, the first time that the community was learning about
it? The community, yeah. Okay. I mean, Facebook as a whole kind of knew, but, okay, yeah. But yeah, like, the community as a whole, yeah, for sure. And I was just saying it to, like, someone that I grew up with that I wasn't that close with, that I knew was probably going to tell their parents. You know, and I would, like, I was very upfront about it, and I was very honest, and there was this, like, discomfort around the table, because, you know, even though we're 30, there's still, like, the kids' table. It's just the kid of 30-year-olds. And some of them were really awkward about it, and some of them were really interested. But it was interesting to, like, have this anxiety and then just be like, why? Like, why am I holding that? Like, if they don't like that, who cares? I see these people.
I mean, it's like you said before. None of us are that important. Nobody cares about anything. And it's very freeing to know that.
Right. And to just be like, they're not going home being like, oh, nobody's you know, they don't care about that.
I'm like, you know what? Maybe they are. Some people actually go home and just talk shit. Right. But, like, so?
Yeah, and then
why do you care?
Maybe you should find a hobby.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it's a them problem.
Yeah, and it was, and it's such, like, I was a little wary about telling people at work, and I waited for many years.
Okay.
Before, like, I waited for 2 years.
But you said they kind of had a sense that something
was
going on.
Yeah, well, I had also changed jobs, but, like, I work in a very small industry, so we all knew each other anyway. And that worked to my benefit because I had gone into the job that I'm in now, which I've been in for a couple of years, and I just came in sober, right? It just came in like, oh, I don't drink, you know, and I've been sober for some time. I just said some time. Mm-hmm. And now I say it, right? But like at the time I was just like, for some, and there was no institutional knowledge there that I ever did drink. They just, they have only known me from day one to day now as someone who is crazy and runs a lot and every now and then picks weird physical hobbies. So is frequently coming in with like an ankle brace or a knee brace or like an arm brace, you know, and like does martial arts and all this other stuff and really likes to talk about audiobooks.
Yeah.
But also is coming in like 15 minutes late because she's usually coming from the gym in the morning. You know what I mean? Like that sort of thing. That's all they've ever known me as.
Okay. So when you walked in and said like, you know, I don't drink, I'm sober, did you feel like, usually I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, usually when people say like I'm sober, they're referring to like I used to have a problem, not that I don't drink, I never have, whatever.
Yeah.
So did you feel like it was important to say I'm sober instead of just leaving it at I don't drink?
I varied it. So a lot of my, I work in publishing, and not to really talk about my job, but a lot of my job is dealing with authors, so that is a kind of client relationship. So then I feel it's less important to be, because the focus is them.
Yeah, okay.
So in that case, I just go, like, especially when it's like, hey, you want a beer? I'm like, sorry, I don't drink.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I mean? And if it gets brought up again, oh, how come, like, whatever it is, and like some people are crappy like that, you know, or sometimes they're just curious, and then I'll just be like, I'm sober. And some people still don't get that, like the older you are, you do, because the older you are, the more you will encounter someone who is sober and understand what that means. But I've definitely seen some people who are like, so have you never drank, like what is that?
Oh, okay.
You know, or is it religious because I'm brown, right? So
oh my god, I know, I'm a vegetarian and it's religious,
apparently. Right, of course.
It's not, it's
yeah,
not.
You're like, oh, thanks. But yeah, and so, and then I'll just be open about it. I won't give like the whole backstory, and I've done that with some people I've worked with when I've gotten to know them, but and I certainly don't hide it. But yeah, like I my approach to sobriety is my approach to a lot of things, in fact, which is be as casual about it. Like, be that person who is calm in the middle of a weird storm. So, like, if I just come into a situation and just be like, sorry, I don't drink, and it's very casual, and it's very whatever, and it's like, sorry, I don't drink, but I'll have a club soda. Like, it's just so normalized, and it's weird because it makes some people very uncomfortable because nothing makes people who drink more uncomfortable than someone who is not drinking.
Right.
It is very weird. People get very agitated that I don't drink. Yeah. Like, people who are very focused on it, they're obviously not friends of mine.
I mean, whether it's someone who's an alcoholic or someone
just
who's
just
religious
not drinking that
or
day.
Just doesn't like drink, like,
it's, or someone who's just not drinking that day. Like, it's always like, but why?
It seems like such a non-issue. It's like, you not drinking has nothing to do with me.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, and it's, I think John Mulaney has a joke about, like, people who start drinking forget everything that you can drink that's not alcoholic, and they start offering you weird things because they, like, forgot. Like, I went to a house party where they were, I'm looking at them making mimosas.
Yeah.
And the girl was like, I don't know if we have anything that doesn't have alcohol. I was like, orange juice? I was like, I'm saying some of that. Like, and it did come from a mean place. She just couldn't place it.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, that's sort of been my approach. And, like, less so with Indian parties because I'm still seen as a child, but I think even more so there, it's like, I'm a girl. You know, I'm not married, which is scandalous, I know. And then I'm being very open about, like, having a drug and alcohol problem, and I don't work in one of these fields. And also, when people ask me how I'm doing, and I love my job, and if you see, like, anything I post, like, it's very focused on my job as well. But if people ask me how I'm doing, like, it's usually not connected to my job, because, like, when am I going to be like, oh yeah, we closed this great deal? Like, I barely care about that. Like, and so I'm usually like, oh yeah, like, I'm training for a marathon, or I'm training for Kilimanjaro. Like, I'm usually talking about these hobbies, and, like, I know what they're asking, but I'm like, these things matter to me more. When I came back, like, and my parents were adorably very proud, you know, and they were like, oh, we told all our friends, and it was actually very cute, because it was, like, the first time they ever really glorified in a thing that I did, and it was, like, very weird feeling. It was nice, but everyone was very focused on the physical part, which was great, and I was like, but you do not understand how hard it was mentally, you know, for me, anyway, and to be in that spot, and I remember...
Yeah, it's not just a physical milestone.
It's not the physical. It's like a, it's really a mental effort.
It seems like your relationship with your parents got a lot better after you started pursuing sobriety.
Yes, I would say that. I would say we had a very fractious relationship before that. Yeah.
That's really interesting. So I know, like, you're talking about how you measure your success in terms of, like, your physical milestones.
do they kind of also track your success in their own ways? Do they like acknowledge it?
I think they do.
Like, what's their relationship with your sobriety / your alcoholism?
That's a great question that I don't know. It reminds me of a story someone told me in a meeting, which was he went home to visit his mom in England or something, and he was like, "Mom, I'm 15 years sober," and she was like, "So is the cat," and like walked away. And I think that's kind of their attitude a little bit.
So do you feel like they still don't really get it?
No, I think that they get it to a certain extent, but I think when I get very emotional around my anniversary, they don't understand it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, my sister does, because my sister and I are close, and so my sister will text everyone in the group, family text, to be like, "Congratulations, happy anniversary," blah, 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 you know. And then my dad will jump in and be like, "Yes, very proud. By the way, did you check the stock market today?" You know what I mean? Like, yeah. That sort of thing. Like, you know, so I think for them, it's a thing that they're proud of, they're happy with.
But do you feel like it's more like they're happy because it's something that, like, sober is something that you should be, or happy because it's something that you struggle with often?
I don't think it's the second, because I don't think they understand that point.
Okay.
I think I've tried to explain that to them, and I think I sort of have given up on that point because you can only beat a dead horse so much. But I don't think it's the former either. I think it has more to do with the fact that being sober enacted all of these other changes in me that they were happy happened. Mm-hmm. And they understood that the catalyst for that was getting sober.
Okay, cool.
You know what I mean? So, like, I think the fact that I started getting healthier, I started to, like, clean my room. I mean, my room's not that clean, but, like, you know. But, like,
started getting your life together.
Yeah, like, I was so depressed. And everything was a mess, and I couldn't even, changing the sheets on my bed, like, felt like such an arduous process, you know, and things like that. So the fact that all these things were happening, I was moving up in my career, people were being very kind to me, people were being very open about the way I was performing professionally, and also how open I was about certain things, and how open I was being about when I was struggling and when I wasn't struggling, you know, I think they were really proud of that, and they can tell that that is tied to sobriety to a certain extent. I think my dad, we have talked about definitely the habits of, like, some of our Indian elders going to parties and weddings and getting, like, super smashed and all of that stuff. And so I think he sort of understands that there is a struggle there, and he has said, only drunk has said this, that he admires the fact that I was able to give it up.
Oh, that's really nice.
Right, which is really nice. He doesn't remember it the next day, but that's fine. You know, but I think for my mom, it, absolutely does not register as a struggle, because she sees it as, I've been sober forever. Mm. I've never drank, you know. But it's interesting, because you're like, what is alcoholic behavior? Is it you actually really drinking, or is it these, like, obsessive thoughts of being obsessed with everybody else and not being able to look internally and not being able to improve ourselves, which is very much both of my parents, which is very much the way that we grew up, and is that, like, them being Indian, or is that us being an alcoholic family, you know, that clearly manifested in a perfect storm in me, you know, had to have come from somewhere, but it's weird. It's one of those things where it's like, oh, I wonder, like, it's like a chicken and the egg kind of thing. These two things clearly fed into each other in a way that they fed off of each other. But yeah, I think that their relationship with it is primarily that they can see it led to other things that they are happier about.
So you bring up a really good point about alcoholic behavior, I think. And you talk about it like it's something that is just so ingrained in you and ingrained into your conditioning. And it is. And I guess the first way to start breaking out of that, which is what I've been hearing, is what you're talking about here, which is about having more structure.
I've had the privilege of sponsoring people at this point, in the way that I have been sponsored wonderfully, and am still. And something that I've always touted too was like, look, if Tuesday felt fine and Wednesday felt terrible, on Thursday just do everything that you did on Tuesday. Like, just emulate the shit out of it. Like, you know, like, whether it's, like, you went to the grocery store, go back to the grocery store. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, whatever you did that day, like, just put that in stone.
I like that.
You know, like, on Saturday, like, you feel crappy. Like, go to work if that made you feel better. Like, you know, and gave you a sense of accomplishment. Like, just whatever it is you need to do to get through that. Like, that, initial period of change for anything, it's not just sobriety, but for anything, is so uncomfortable, like mm-hmm. marathon training, hiking, like any sort of big thing that you're starting, that beginning stage is always so hard because you're yeah. establishing the routine. You don't know what you're okay with. Sometimes you have to change your routine. Sometimes you're like, I can't run 5 times a week. I can't do it, mm-hmm. you know, and I have to change that and figure it out. But you only know that from sticking to the 5 times a week for a little bit and then realizing it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And so it's like that routine needs to be there. And to a certain extent, there needs to be this understanding and acceptance that, like, it sucks right now, but it's going to be okay. And I think that that was something that I was not brought up with. I don't think that anyone that I grew up with was brought up with this either. You know what I mean? Like, my parents were very, like, immediate kind of people, you know? And it's like, oh, this makes us uncomfortable. Let's not do it. You know, like, this does not follow our life plan. Let's not do it. You know, like, this is distracting from your studies. Let's not do it. Without realizing that, like, there's always kind of a trial and error process. And yeah. there's always kind of a process of, like, you know, changing your major when it's not gonna, when you decide, I don't wanna be a doctor anymore, I'm gonna do this other thing instead, you know, and that insecurity of like, oh, I don't know what happens next from here,
yeah.
that to some extent is okay. And I think there's a way to take that too far, for sure. You shouldn't just be like dropping out of school left and right. But I think there's such a fear of breaking from the norm that like nobody ever does anything new without realizing that the way to do something new and that like insecurity and that fear that you feel is very normal. And it's not indicative of anything. Like some people like to be like, oh, that fear that you feel is really just God telling you that it's the path that you should be taking. I've heard that. And I was like, oh, that's really, like, I believe in God, but like, it's a little intense. It's a weird way for God to communicate, I think. But like, did hear that someone was like, oh, when you feel that feeling in your soul, I was like, it's not just anxiety, like, I don't but like, it's very normal. Like, if I like take a different path to work, I accidentally get on the wrong train, I instantly feel very anxious.
Yeah,
you know. And it's just like, okay, like, let me like pivot, like, okay, I accidentally am on the F train, okay, like, let me work with this. And I think like my sister and I were never raised that way. I don't think anyone in my family was raised that way.
Yeah. To have that, like, kind of adaptability,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a great way of putting it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just the adaptability.
Well, it seems like your parents have adapted to
in their
your
way.
Condition. In their way,
yes,
yeah.
No, they absolutely have. I would say, like, I've been very fortunate. But I think a lot of it is conditioned. Like, it's a really bad way of putting it. But I, like, see it as, like, training a pet. Like, I really see it as, like, okay. me training my parents, like, training my cat. Because the thing is, when I put my cat on a diet, she instantly was like, this is the worst. The yeah. life is ending. I don't get, like, I'm dying. I'm actually dying. I don't have food when I want it. She's losing her mind the minute she went from free feeding to you're only getting a third cup during these times, you know? And it's like, I just had to, like, be okay, you yeah. know? And I just had to be like, sorry, you're still only getting a third cup. Here are cuddles, yeah. you know? But, like, you're not getting more food. Mm. And, like, whenever my parents got very agitated, they did. They got agitated. They got very upset in the beginning that I was being very open about all this. Mm. And they got very upset that it seemed as though I was very proud of all of this, because they felt is very shameful. You know, why are you being proud of it? And I had to just, not to be all 12-steppy, because I try not to be when I'm not in a meeting, but, you know, I just had to write that down as a resentment. I had to literally not respond, write that down as a resentment when I got home, and just let it go. And be like, I can't do anything. I can't change your mind. I can't, but I can't react to it. Because if I react to it, now you've been given something, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if I react to my cat freaking out about, like, wanting food in the morning and give her food, like, now I'm feeding into her anxiety about yeah. it. But if I'm just, like, proceeding with the normal routine, she's going to fall in line. Like, she is. Mm-hmm. And, like, with the same thing with my parents. But I didn't change the way. I still text them every day. Mm-hmm. That has not changed. And there are days where they're upset, and they especially, like, whenever, like, every year when I get sober, I, like, write, like, a whole essay and whatever, mm-hmm. and it's usually very personal, and they're very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I don't hear from them for a few days afterwards, because it's uncomfortable, and all of their friends are now seeing it, you know? Mm-hmm. So...
Oh, you have their friends on Facebook,
too. I have some of their friends on Facebook, yeah, okay. yeah. But I have all their kids on Facebook, uh-huh. so their kids are... you know, posting on it saying, oh, we love this, and, like, uh-huh. congratulations, so their parents are obviously now seeing it.
Okay, yeah.
And so, you know, it's embarrassing for them, and I still just continue to text, like, here's a picture of Clover on her back, here's a picture of Clover now on her belly, you know, and just going with it, and it sort of trains them into being like, look, I can't this is now fine. It's now ultimately fine.
Yeah. And it really is, at least they've like given up trying to.
Right.
Like,
it's just training. I like hate saying it like that, but you kind of have to look at it that way.
No, I know what you mean. Does it bother you that they don't / probably will never really understand alcoholism / sobriety? And
it used to. And when I am not doing great, it does.
Okay.
In moments where I'm doing really well, which thankfully are more frequent and usually all the time now, but it's like, you know what? Would I like you to be more involved and understand more? Sure. But is that in the scheme of things necessary for me to like do what I need to do? No. So like, I can either sit here and be upset about it and take that resentment in, or I could just let that one go and be like, okay, like, it's frustrating. I'm acknowledging it in the moment because it's not helpful when you like pretend it doesn't bother you. Yeah. But like, I'm acknowledging it. It's very frustrating. I'm going to talk to my cat about it.
Yeah.
And then just let it go and be like, all right, fine. I'll go talk to someone without, I mean this in the non-petty way. Like, I'll talk to someone who does care about it, you know? And I'll talk to someone who maybe is also sober, or maybe just a friend who's like friendly, or we can have a discussion that will help both of us. And sometimes that's also a way that I try to think about it too, where I'm like, you know what? Having this conversation with them is not helpful to either one of us. It's only going to frustrate me. It's only going to make them uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
If I have this conversation with someone who is also sober, it is enriching both of our lives. You know, if having it with someone from Al-Anon, it's now a different perspective, the opposite perspective, and it's actively bringing something to both of us. And so I sometimes try to think about it that way, and then I think maybe the utility of it sometimes helps.
Okay. Yeah.
That makes sense. It's
really, I mean, I think it also goes back to, like, what you were saying before, like, you have to choose your battles.
Yeah.
You choose the battles you have with your parents.
Yeah. You have to choose all your battles and choose your, I mean, you choose your resentments. What was it? Carrie Fisher said, resentments, drinking poison, and hoping the other person dies. It's so true, though.
Yeah.
It really is. Like, am I going to sit here and be mad at you forever? Like, I could be. I'm really good at that. But, like, what does that do? Like, sometimes you don't even know I'm mad at you forever, and I'm just decided.
Yeah.
You know, it does nothing. It just creates, and I'm so anxious. I have severe, severe anxiety and like legit a problem. And like, it doesn't help if I'm like seeing things that way. Like, I have to, the way I see it too is like, I have to try to mitigate it as best as I can.
Yeah.
So.
Do you think if you could talk to your younger self, pre-sober Nita, like, do you think you could get through to you?
If I could change anything? I've thought about that a lot, actually. Because everybody always says that, like, what would you say to your younger self 10 years ago?
I know, it's such a cliche question.
No, but it's an interesting one because it ties into a larger theme, which is like, could I have changed the inevitability?
I know all these people were talking to you like, what's wrong with you?
We
are trying to get you to stop. But like, do you think, and I think I know the answer to this, but like, even if you could go and talk to yourself, do you think anything could have changed?
Possibly could have. I think, again, it's just, it's a crapshoot. I think most likely not, because it took so long to get to that point. It didn't just take like one hitting. You don't hit rock bottom once. And rock bottom is such a weird concept too. Like, there's always so much debate about what rock bottom really means.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that actually could have appealed, because I think I was under the preconception, misconception, both, of rock bottom being the worst thing that happens to you. Because I think that's what we're sort of institutionalized to think. Rock bottom is the worst thing. It is the bottom of the thing. It's when you go to jail and all of the bad things happen. And I've heard it describe two different ways, and I honestly waffle on which definition I like more depending on my mood. I've heard it once described as, rock bottom is just when you choose to stop digging.
Okay.
Wherever that is. And it could be relatively close to the top,
like,
but
that,
it's where you stop digging, and that's your rock bottom. And sometimes I really like that. And then the other one is, I've heard rock bottom is that moment where you just throw everything down and you go, I don't know what to do.
Okay.
It's that moment where you just know, and it doesn't necessarily have to do with God. The person said it in the context of God, because I happen to be religious as well, but that whole concept of just, I'm not in control. That's the whole idea behind sobriety, behind program, is it has everything. That's how the whole program started. It started from two men going, I can't keep myself sober, but I care about you. And I care about you more than I care about myself, because this is the trend of things. It's how we're all raised, you know? And so if I do everything I can to help you because I care about you, and you do everything you can to help me, now we have given ourselves a better chance than when I was helping myself.
Okay, that's really interesting.
That's literally how it started.
I didn't know that's how it started, but I feel like at like a really young age I figured out, because I've had like chronic depression, like I remember being depressed when I was like 9 years old.
Right.
Like just forever. And I like my way of combating that was like, you know what? I don't care about myself at all. I don't even like myself. But I'm gonna go and try to help someone else. Yeah. I mean, I had never, I guess like there's just so many similarities between alcoholism and like depression that I'm hearing from you that I just, it didn't occur to me.
Yeah.
Because that's just not a problem I had.
Yeah, yeah, no, and it's fascinating how like they all tie together too. Yeah. It's like, so like if I hear someone talk, gambling was never a problem of mine. I'm sure I could have gotten it real fast, but but when I hear, I've had friends who have had serious gambling problems and had needed to go to gambling program, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And hearing them talk about gambling, it's the same feeling where I'm like, what? Like, it's a different problem we have, but it's the same problem, you know, with the same solution. It's very weird. And so, like, I totally get that. Because, like, my depression has always manifested as a product of my anxiety. So it's been very incidental. It's been, like, for a week. You know, it hasn't been... I know some people who have had chronic depression who have suffered from that, and I can't even imagine. And so, but mine has always been anxiety driven, and it has always been tied to my addiction, you know, at moments where that has struggled.
Okay.
So it's interesting because, yeah, like sometimes I, for friends of mine who've talked about chronic depression, it again seems so similar, but different at the same time. And it's like really fascinating.
Yeah.
But that's how it started. And that's the whole concept, like surrendering yourself over. And the reason why I think it gets its like Jesus cult religious, you know, kind of tint to it in modern culture, which is fine. Again, it has a lot to do with the fact that the idea is like, I clearly don't know what the hell I'm doing. Yeah. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. Yeah. You know, like none of us would be in this room if we knew what we were doing. Someone else has to be doing a better job. And I remember like someone who was not religious was having a really hard time. We were being sponsored by the same person, and she felt very strongly that we should know each other. It's, I don't think that's very common, but she felt like you guys should be able to bond. And I remember this person was having a really hard time with the concept of surrendering, and she was like, all right, if that chair, if you surrendered your will over to that chair, I guarantee you that chair would do a better job of managing your life than you have at this point. And like, we just sat there and we're like, ouch. But it was one of those things where it's like, it's just about you just not being in charge.
Yeah.
Like you're just messing it up right now. Yeah. Just give it to anything else, you know? And a lot of times, even if you are religious, you just end up giving it up to that room.
Okay.
And giving up to everybody else. So, like, in the case of me being like, I'm going to kill myself, and that guy being like, eh, wait till tomorrow. I was like, you might be onto something. Like, I just gave it up to that guy.
Yeah.
You know? And I was right, too. I didn't know what I was doing. I had no idea what I was doing. But that guy saying that, the person who ended up sponsoring me, saving my life, really, you know, she, like, gave me her phone number, as they all do, and was like, you are calling me tomorrow at 8 o'clock in the morning. Like, just told me. And then I didn't. Because I didn't. And she called me at like 8:30, you know, and just kept going. Like, didn't berate me for not calling, but like, just kept going. And it just was one of those things where like, I just gave it up and trusted her. And that can sometimes go wrong, but like, the whole concept of the group is like, everyone is keeping each other in check. It's hard to be nefarious if you're in a group, you know, than if you're like one-on-one. And I always liked that idea, and I always felt like that was a really good, like, again, it's all about, I always feel like it's all about finding, instead of denying who you are and denying the way we're raised and the way that we're programmed, it's finding these fixes to do that. I'm the most whiny person I know. I love to whine. I will complain about everything. That's my reward for doing things. Like, people are always like, oh, reward yourself, and that's how you can motivate yourself to work out. And I tried that for a long time. Like, oh, if I do this, then I get to have this cupcake. Guess what? I just ate the cupcake. You know, like, I just couldn't do it. But then I was like, if I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and I run for 4 miles, I complain the whole day on Instagram that I had to run for 4 miles.
Yeah.
That was motivating to me because I'm a sick person. But I was like, but that was my reward. And that was how I was able to deal with this and be able to do the thing I needed to do while understanding this thing about myself, which is, guess what? I'm never going to stop complaining about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I might as well utilize that. So it's the same
sort
of thing. And I really, and I liked that mentality because it became so much more, it taught me, and it taught a lot of people, I think, how to accept themselves while also not making excuses for that. Like, alcoholism is a big thing because the thing is, guess what? think Jameson is the best thing in the world. I love Jameson. That's great. I just love Jameson more than most people love Jameson. So I just can't have any. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, if I could sit there and math it out, like, you want to talk about moderation, I could sit there and maybe math out, this is how much Jameson I can have in order to be okay, and that is super stressful, and I don't necessarily know if I can stick to that. So therefore, the way that I fix that problem is by not having any. Mm-hmm. And that's the simplest way to describe becoming sober.
Yeah.
And why you become sober. It ultimately just becomes like a numbers game, really.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like, this is just a thing I have to accept. It's not a thing that I, like, avoid. I'm not an ex-alcoholic. I'm always an alcoholic. I'm going to be one. Therefore, I just don't drink anything,
yeah.
You know? And it's the way that I accept myself while also instituting the structure and instituting all these rules that help me get about my day and also manage my life. Like, so much of it, too, like, there are the traditions and the promises of the program, and you recite them in the beginning of every meeting, and it's very culty, but it's done so that, like, if I am going to DC for the weekend, I can go into a meeting in there and it's run exactly the same way,
mm-hmm.
and everybody's saying the same stuff, and it's okay. Very welcoming that way. But a big part of it is, like, we will learn how to, this is not a quote, I don't remember the quote, I should, but, like, learn how to, like, intuitively deal with situations that we just couldn't before. You know, and you do that by instituting rules.
Yeah. I've always recognized this about the alcoholic community, that they, or recovering community, that there's just, like, such a good, strong support system that people have access to develop.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, not to, like, glorify the whole thing, but I feel like I've always thought that was really... It's, like, something that I've always desired. I don't know. I mean, I think it's really hard. It's awesome. Like, I'm happy that people have that.
But it's hard for other things.
It's hard for other, mental illnesses. Like, it's hard for people like me who have, like, a lot of chronic depression. Like, I, you know, I'm lucky because I have some great friends. They'll check in with me, see if I'm okay. But, like, I mean, I think you probably experience a similar thing. But every day I have to check myself.
Yeah.
Every day is, like, it's exhausting. I have to keep moving. I have to keep trying and, like... I have to reward myself for doing little things like getting out of bed and, like, having breakfast. And it's just, like, I guess I wish I kind of had a support system like that.
Yeah, no.
Or, like, other people did. Like I said, I'm lucky. Like, I have good friends.
No, and I totally understand that. And I think it's also worth mentioning that there are, like, groups for all of these. It's really unfortunate because, like, I think so much of it isn't talked about. Like, mental health is so not talked about, and that's a totally different subject. But, you know... I encountered it. I've never had an eating disorder. Thank God. Alcohol was so hard for me. Like, when I was trying to get back to major, I, like, didn't know how to talk to people anymore. Like, it was so weird. And I can't imagine if I had an eating disorder, how difficult it is. And I have friends who have eating disorders, and it's so unfortunate to see how triggering everything is, because everything is go for a drink or go get food. You know, and the way that I reconcile it to myself was, I'm just gonna go to the diner and get food and I will drink coffee forever.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, obviously not an option for them. That is still very triggering.
Mm.
And I was really surprised to find that they also had meetings, you know, and I didn't know that. And that wasn't necessarily...
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And, like, that, like, there was someone that I knew who suffered from, not depression, almost like a manic kind of depression, though.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, she would just go into the, like, just constant.
Yeah.
And she ended up going to, like, Emotions Anonymous or something.
Okay.
You know, and that was apparently a thing. And I think she didn't go for very long, but she found it to be very helpful, because it was the same kind of concept of, like, being in a room full of people who understood. Like, the baseline is there, right? I don't need to, like, go into a room. I mean, I do go into a room and say, hey, Anita, I'm an alcoholic, but... I don't need to come in and be like, oh, this is very difficult. Yeah, like, I can already cut to the chase of, like, I have to go to a bachelorette party. I'm very uncomfortable because we're going to be in a city that I don't really know. And I can immediately just jump into that and get, it's a whole room
of
people nodding.
So that's what I'm talking about. Just the fact that, like, this network exists and you can just cut to the chase. And sometimes, you know, it's hard to be, like, very raw and very open with your friends about these, like, very personal things. Like, I don't want to talk about my, like, episode I had yesterday all the time, you know?
Yeah. And also, and then give you context and try to explain and be like, don't worry about anything, because that's also part of it, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you say I'm struggling, people are like, okay.
Yeah.
And, like, versus...
Sometimes that's fine to hear. Sometimes I can't take it.
Right, And sometimes, like, they don't know how to respond, and it seems like a crisis situation. And it's sometimes helpful to walk in. I found it very helpful for me early days and in bad days. And I try to do the same for other people when they are telling me about going through a tough time, being as, like... cool as possible. Not like disconnected and uninterested, but just, it's fine. Like,
just listening, right?
Yeah, and just being there. Like, someone that I sponsored briefly who was sober only a few months was like, I feel terrible. And I was like, I know. Like, and I couldn't help but laugh. I was like, I know. Like, and she was like, no, you don't understand. And I was like, oh, I do. It's fine. You can talk about it. Yeah. It feels awful. And she was like, yeah, but it feels like it's not going to go away. And I was like, it won't for a while, you know? And like, but, and we had talked since then, and she's doing much better now and all this other stuff, but you know, it was reassuring for her in the same way it was reassuring for me too, because there's something about hearing from somebody else. Like, I totally know what you're talking about. It's nothing to worry about. You know, like when I would sit there and be like, I feel bored by everything and I feel like I'm losing my mind and I can't sleep, but I also can't be focused and I can't do. And then to have, and my friends and family were like, oh my God, oh my God. And then to walk into a room where they were like, yeah. That sucks.
You know? I enjoy the frankness that you're describing.
Yeah, it's like, and it's so refreshing. And it's centered, right? Mm-hmm. It's not the guy in McDonald's writing in his notebook. They're looking at you. You are not playing on your phone in meetings. You have the floor. Yeah. But it's people chiming in. Either some people who are like, ooh, I haven't experienced that yet. Or other people being like, I remember that, you know?
I find that there's something like really attractive about the anonymity too.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, for me, that's kind of the reason that I became okay with going to therapy.
Yeah.
And talking to the stranger about, like, my,
yeah,
like, thoughts. I know that there are groups that exist for, like, whatever, ED, for, like, depression, for whatever.
Yeah.
But I'm really glad to know that it's just such a big network.
I think it's, like, weird because we do definitely get a reputation for being culty. And I incidentally find cults fascinating, so maybe that's why I like it.
I kind of do, too.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
And so, but it has to be. Like, it has to be. Yeah. And, I remember thinking about that, too. Sometimes I'm like, this thing is too strict. How come I can only talk for 4 minutes?
But I think it's something that only you guys will understand.
Right, but also, like, because if you don't say you can only talk for 4 minutes, we will all talk for 2.5 hours. You know what I mean? But if you don't say that, that's what we're going to do.
Yeah,
you know, okay. If you don't say you cannot play on your phone, everyone's going to play on their phone. If you can't say you have to stay for the whole meeting out of respect, someone is going to leave halfway through or come in halfway through.
Yeah.
You know, and like, so if you don't say these things, if you don't say, look, there's no requirement for membership except for the desire to quit drinking, you know, but if you are drunk, please do not speak in the room, because that can be a trigger for somebody else.
Yeah.
Because you don't know. Like, and so, but if you don't say that, people are going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like all of these things, and that structure is so important for people who are structureless, for people who are in varying stages of not knowing how to deal with themselves, deal with their life. Like, that Russell Brand thing really stayed with me, because, like, the idea that drugs and alcohol were my medicine and my problem was being unable to deal. And I thought about it too, because I was like, I can't, like, for me, I'm such an extroverted person. Something that I struggle with now is trying to have a day by myself. Mm-hmm. I literally don't do that. And it makes me so uncomfortable to spend a day not talking to anyone. Because then I just feel like I'm directionless. Like, I have to talk to someone and have some part of my schedule be dictated by somebody else. And, like, whether it's meeting up with somebody or something. And learning that, like, I can exist in and of myself. And that's a struggle.
Interesting. Okay.
And it's a thing that I resolved before, because when I would be home alone, I would just drink a six-pack. And I felt fine. I didn't worry about anything. You know? And so, it's stuff like that, but now I'm aware. Like, now I know what that problem was, what problem that was fixing, and now I can look at that problem and be like, okay, so now what can I do? Like, what is going to be my, like, this is maybe not the best way to frame this, but, like, what is going to be my drugs and alcohol in this case?
Yeah.
You know? And just, and acknowledging that. And it's like, that structure is so important. Like, if anything, it's so weird, too, because I hated that part of our upbringing.
Yeah.
But the structure, like, that was the one takeaway where I was like, the structure was so...
That's a good point. I mean, brown people do things like, they have dinner at, like, 12 a.m. and, like, their kids are up past, like, there's no bedtime or anything.
No, ever.
It's just, like, kind of isn't really a structure aside from, like, study 95% of the time.
Yeah, study. Don't have feelings about anything.
Yeah.
Unless they're feelings about your studies, and only if they're positive. You know, let me tell you about how in India I got up at 5 o'clock in the morning to study.
Yeah. Walked barefoot for 12 miles.
Yeah, to go to school. You know, like, all of that. And that was it. Like, the structure was so needlessly applied in other areas.
Yeah.
You know, when it could have been applied. Like, I remember at one point saying to my mom, oh, I wish I had done martial arts when I was younger because it taught me discipline in a way that has been very helpful. And I think would have been helpful in my later years. And she was like, well, you didn't want to do karate. That's not my fault. And I was like, I didn't want to do math homework. You still made me do that. Why didn't you just make me do a sport? Like, and not that I, like, actually blamed her for it, but it was interesting what she felt like was within the bounds of, like, I can put structure on this, and what was like, oh, I guess my daughter doesn't want to do it, you know?
Yeah. I love how much you relate this journey to structure, because I think for me, because I've never had this problem, I don't know, like, really a lot of people with this problem, like, very few. I learned so much today about alcoholism that, like, I try to be informed, but there's so many things I didn't know, and that's why I was so interested in doing this episode. So, I mean, I just wanted to, like, thank you for coming on and just teaching me so much, and, like, I'm sure that other people are gonna listen to this and learn so much, and it's very interesting. It's, like, it's also just surprisingly relatable for me.
That's awesome.
A lot of things you're saying.
Yeah. Thank you.
Awesome.
For having
Thank
me.
You so much.
Of course.
Okay, so that's the end of the episode, but before I leave you, I wanted to give you one quick update. So exciting, I've just launched my website. You can now visit me at tdcpodcast.com. The website is basically an extension of this podcast in that there will be links to sources for anything I may have researched for episodes if anyone's curious about that stuff. It's also a space for Desi creatives to be represented in one spot because, let's face it, mental health is more than just an audio media. So if you send me your gorgeous work, whether it's writing, art, photography, whatever it may be, I'll post it on the website. And I'm also going to be on a fun. I'll be blogging and posting some of my own stuff, so you should go check that out right meow. Some lovely people have already contributed, and oh, it brings me so much joy. Anyways, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and hopefully you learned something. And if you have any questions or comments, reach out on Facebook or Instagram at The Desi Condition, or email me at thedesicondition@gmail.com, or visit my fantastic new website. Again, that's tdcpodcast.com, and you can talk to me there. And if you're listening to this on a platform where you can leave ratings and reviews, please consider doing so. And in the meantime, you can like every single thing I post on Instagram and Facebook. Otherwise, I'll talk to you next time. Okay, thanks for listening. Bye.